Well, hello there, and welcome to my almost midlife crisis. I'm your host, Jennifer Mathis. This podcast is about that time in your life when you're not young, but you sure aren't old yet either. You know that saying, you learn something new every day? I've always liked that saying because I truly believe that life is a learning journey. You're never going to know everything, and you're always going to run into something that surprises you. And that's great, right? Because wouldn't it be boring if you just became an expert in everything and you didn't have any new information for the rest of your life? But on the flip side, are there things that we maybe should have known earlier? This episode is focusing on just that. Things learned later in life that kind of feel late to be uncovered. So if you've ever had a moment when you thought, well, that's good to know, then this one's for you. Sometimes when I look back, I think about when I was a teenager, I thought I knew so much, but I really didn't know anything, right? Like, we had it all figured out. Then when we got into our 20s, we were even more smart. Like, we were in the real world now, and therefore we gained this like sense of wisdom. We all knew that person that we considered the old soul. And maybe that was us. That was not me, just to be clear. I actually never thought of myself as that old soul. But we all knew somebody that was. And in our 20s, we had this sense of newfound wisdom. And we were confident in our knowledge, walking about the world, right? Then in our 30s, it felt more and more like maybe we didn't know as much as we thought. Like, the longer we spent in this quote unquote real world, the more we realized that we had so much more to learn, especially when it comes to anything outside of our bubble, like getting out of the comfort zone. This was actually a big wake-up call for me in my 30s because that's when I really began to travel. And when it came to travel, you know, growing up, I traveled here or there, but it was nothing big. Like, my biggest trip prior to 30 years old was a Mediterranean cruise with my mom for college graduation. But as you know, or maybe you don't, cruises pretty much, they give you like, they're like a taste test. They give you a taste of places, but they don't really give you a true essence. They're like the trip that's least likely to push you out of your comfort zone. And since I was with my mom, you know, this meant really focusing on like excursions, right? Like pre-done packaged excursions and not just roaming around and getting lost, which is part of the fun of traveling. So while we were in Santorini, which was beautiful, and so was the Parthenon, when you arrive on a tour bus and you eat a prepackaged lunch, then maybe you're learning historical facts from the tour guide, but nothing life-changing. But it's a start, right? You're at least in a new place and you're experiencing new smells, new sights, and you're coming into contact with people that you probably wouldn't have if you were at home. So it's a start. But when I turned 30 and Christian and I were dating, our love for travel, which is something that we share, quickly turned into regular adventures. And speaking out of your getting out of your comfort zone, our first big trip together was climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. And I have to say, this was the trip I can honestly say changed my life for the better, as I was really faced with so many real world lessons that I wish I would have learned earlier. So the first lesson was physically, it was the first time I truly had to push myself harder than I thought I could. Like, I had always been an athlete and I was a pretty good one, and I was no stranger to pushing myself physically. But climbing to the summit with oxygen tubes up my nose to combat altitude sickness was a whole new level. I had never actually experienced that feeling of like your whole body just choosing that flight response, right? Like, it's like fight or flight and your body's like, I'm out of here. And it's really its attempt to protect itself. Everyone was telling me, you know, everything in my body, like my every single fiber in my body was saying, hey girl, like stop, I need you to turn around and it's time to quit. Like, my skin was pale, I was like almost a shade of blue, I couldn't breathe without the oxygen because, you know, growing up in the Midwest, where our tallest quote unquote hill is Columbus Drive off of Michigan Avenue, which after at the end of a marathon seems like a mountain, but it's really not. My body was not exactly used to altitude. So there were multiple times that I was truly concerned I would fall off of a rock to my death. And because, I mean, the only thing I could see was with a light that was on our headlamps as we climbed 7 hours to the crater at the top. And did I mention that this was after 4 days of hiking? That was just, that 4 days just got us to the bottom of the summit. We still then had to do a 7 hour overnight trek to the top. It was in those moments that I finally learned the meaning of the saying mind over matter. My body had already given up, and the only thing getting me to the top was my mental determination. So you might ask, so what did you tell yourself to get your ass to the top of that summit? Well, I feel like for mental determination to truly take over and be successful, you have to know yourself well enough to know what motivates you. So for me, I am cheap and I hate wasting time. So, and this trip was actually like at that point was the most expensive trip I had ever taken. And it was the farthest I had ever traveled. So I really just kept telling myself, you do not fly halfway around the world and spend all of that money to not even get to the top. And that was pretty much on repeat until finally I was at the top. And boy, you should have seen those pics. I was pretty much leaning on the sign, oxygen tubes and all, looking as if I was going to die. Like I was just going to keel over right there, but I did not. And I made it. So mind over matter, lesson learned. More importantly than that, though, that trip was the first time I came face to face with true, true economic inequality. And it was to a level that was so much more than anything I have or probably could experience in the US. Like in the States, you know, we think of poor as homeless. Like that's the bottom. You're sleeping on the street, you're panhandling. And that, you know, I see all the time, unfortunately. I live in downtown Chicago and the sight of homeless people is pretty much an everyday occurrence. Like some of them are fake, but most of them are almost neighbors at this point because you see the same ones day in and day out. And I realize that me saying some of them are fake probably sounds cruel or cold, but I'm sorry, it's true. There are some that I only see when it's nice weather. They come in the summer, they have all this gear with them, they don't sleep on the street, they usually have pets, which is a whole other issue. And in fact, my dad used to always tell the story that when he used to work downtown, there was a panhandler on Michigan Avenue Bridge, and he would give him whatever change was in his pocket, right, that day, whatever was jingling around in there on his way to work. Every day, give him whatever was in his pocket. And then one day, my dad was in Vegas, and guess who he saw? Oh, yeah, that guy. He saw the panhandler that he gave all his change to gambling in Vegas from Chicago. So to this day, my dad, he always says, like, never give him money. Like, always give him, like, food or something else. And I do actually pretty much do that. But the real ones, you know the real ones, especially in Chicago, because they're out there in the winter. Like, Chicago winter is no joke. It is freezing. And most of us just hibernate as much as possible. Like we just try to avoid leaving our homes. It's pretty much like COVID quarantine for like 4 months. So if someone is sitting outside all day and worse, sleeping outside in a Chicago winter, you better believe they have nowhere else to go because no one is choosing that. Okay. But that's the worst I've ever seen. Like that is the worst. Homeless sleeping outside in a Chicago winter. And that's bad. I mean, I'm not saying that isn't bad. That is bad. But up until Tanzania, I thought that that was the bottom. But so on our trip, two things stuck out to me that opened my eyes in a way that is always going to stick with me. So first, our homeless people at least have rights. So there, if you're poor, you have no rights. If you have anything valuable on your land, like coffee plants, the government takes ownership of your land without asking, no permission needed. And if the government decides your house lives on land that they want to use for something, maybe they want to build a road or they want to put something there, oh, simple. They just spray paint a huge X on the front of your house, notifying that they're going to be tearing it down at some point. No questions asked, nothing you can do about it. You're just going to lose your home. Second, when you hike Kilimanjaro, you have no choice, but you have to do it with a guide, right? Like for safety reasons. And so we have a group, we had a group of 15 hikers from all around, I mean, actually all around the world. And we were supported by a total number of 50 people. And yes, I realize that that is a lot. Each hiker receives a porter, and they're the ones that carry your bag up the mountain because you're only allowed to really carry like a backpack, like your essentials for that day. But then you have your whole other bag, and there is a weight limit on that bag, but there's a whole other bag that has like all of your gear for the entire hike. So the rest of your gear is carried by the porters. And then you have the porters that literally carry your shit up the mountain, the bathroom porters. They clean the porter potty after you each night or after the group. And they carry it to the next camping site and do the same thing the following day after the camp clears out on their hike. So yeah, that's right. So next time you complain about your job, just think about if your job, what if your job was cleaning and transporting a porter potty by hand up a mountain, okay? Really puts things into perspective. Then there were cooks that obviously fed 15 people three meals a day. And then there's guides. So the guides, those were like, they have certifications, like health certifications to make sure that, you know, we arrive safely. And so they are also, they're kind of like the highest level, like the managers of the group, right? And you can tell that they were paid well because they had appropriate clothes and they looked healthy. However, on the flip side, the porters, a lot of times they were skinny. They didn't have the right clothes for the trip. And in a lot of cases, they didn't even have shoes or they had flip-flops. Yeah, they were carrying our bags up a mountain with no shoes. But the crazy thing is that they were happy, or at least they seemed like it. Like they were making money, which they were excited about, even if it wasn't much. Never in my life had I been more thankful for even the most basic of necessities. And that's not even mentioning the children's foster home we visited. I left that trip appreciating things like sidewalks because I didn't have to constantly look down to make sure I didn't trip over something and roll down a mountain. When we returned home, I actually felt guilty having any sort of luxury or any first world problem. Like if I complained about anything, I immediately had a sense of guilt. And it truly impacted the way I look at the world and how I thought about politics and society. And then it made me think, I really wish I would have experienced that earlier in life. I mean, growing up in the middle-class Chicago suburbs, 30 years old was the first time I was faced with true poverty. Not U.S. poverty, real poverty. And if I had seen this when I was younger, would I have been less entitled? Would I have been more grateful? Like, how would this perspective have had impacted me throughout my life? You know, traveling is so great for lessons. The older I get, the more I can tell within minutes if someone is well-traveled. And it's not because they're bragging about a trip or not, but it's because of the perspective it gives you. Like it is painfully obvious when you meet someone that has never left the U.S., never gotten out of their comfort zone, because there are life lessons that you cannot learn in books or in a classroom or in the media. Like some only stick with you if you experience them for yourself. And as we get older, we have more resources at our disposal. So if you haven't yet traveled to a place that makes you slightly or maybe really uncomfortable, I really encourage you to do so because you're not going to regret it. The other surprising area of learning that I've been dealing with is fertility and family planning. As a 39-year-old woman, I thought at this point I would know my body. I'm an expert in all things of the female form, as I should be because I have one. And in some cases, I should definitely be my own expert. I mean, I will say I am sometimes. I mean, I know when something's up. Like, I am that person that goes straight to the doctor, and I go often. Like, my doctor knows who I am. I do not only go for yearly exams because I catch things really early and sometimes even before the doctor. I am very in tune with my body. So as we start to plan a family, you would think that I'd be like good to go, right? That knowledge would be there. Wrong. Being an almost middle-aged woman starting the journey that is family planning, I have learned more about my body and this process than I ever thought possible. Like, as girls growing up, we're pretty much taught that, like, if you have sex, you're going to get pregnant. So for the entirety of our sexually active adulthood, we are constantly concerned we're going to get pregnant if our period is off by like a day. Like, we're out there at Walgreens, we're buying a first response kit. Hell, we wouldn't even wait until then. We would be taking it the next day, which I've now learned is a complete waste of time because shit doesn't happen that fast. But now that I'm trying to reverse the 20 years I've told my body to not get pregnant, I come to find out it's actually really difficult, and not just because of my age, okay? So you can calm down on that front. I don't need the pressure. I've been getting that from my parents for at least a decade. But really, there's this window of like 5 days per month that can change every month if your period isn't regular, and where there's actually a possibility of getting pregnant. It's 5 days max. Then you have to wait almost 2 weeks before an at-home test is even going to pick up anything or pick up enough of the hormone to give you a positive. Oh, and if it's negative, it can be a false negative because your hormone levels aren't high enough. If it's a positive, it can be a chemical pregnancy, or you can miscarry, or you can have an ectopic, I think you say it, pregnancy. You can spot your whole pregnancy. You can bleed and still be pregnant. You can have symptoms, which mean nothing, or they mean you could die. Thanks, Google. Like, never. Google is an enemy when it comes to your body. Like, even if you're just like, oh, I have a cold. It's like, what is that? Well, let's see. You can have a cold. It could be nothing, or you can have a deadly disease and you're going to die in 6 months. Like, it's really just like a very wide range. Not helpful. It's this never-ending roller coaster of emotion that requires a level of patience that I definitely do not have. And there's so much more. I mean, what the heck? I'm 30 years old. I'm 39. Like, how is there this much I don't know about my own body? And I know I'm not the only one, because I know multiple women in my situation right now, and there is mutual frustration on this matter. Like, why was I not taught this? Why does it feel like I was almost lied to about how easy it was? Like, every time I learn something, I'm like, oh, good to know. Good to know. Not sure how I've never heard of that, but good to know. Like, I can't believe I'm having to say it as often as I am. And now that I'm entering my 40s, it really starts to raise the question, what else do I not know? With age comes wisdom, but what I've learned is that knowledge is really limited if you wait for it to come to you. We only gain as much wisdom as the effort we put into learning. And there is a stark difference between people that intentionally move through the world looking for opportunities to learn and grow and those who don't. It has nothing to do with income or status in society, and it has nothing to do with how you were raised or what your hometown is. Looking for ways to step out of your comfort zone and to learn something new is available to everyone. The journey might look different, but the older I get, the more I realize that the only excuse not to is because you don't want to. Maybe you like your comfort zone. Maybe you like your bubble. But just know that those of us that chose the other route can recognize you very quickly. Maybe it's in the audacity when you expect a baker in France to speak to you in English. Or maybe it's in the entitlement when you declare being asked to wear a mask is an infringement on your constitutional rights. But the tells are there, and they are so obvious you'd be broke if you use them in a poker game. So which road are you going to take? It doesn't matter if you're 25 or 35 or 55. It's never too late to start getting more curious about the world around you and to open your mind to the idea that you don't know everything. And the best part is, you never will. Thank you so much for listening today. Please rate, review, and share with others you think would like it. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And if you would rather read instead of listen, you can download the transcripts on myalmostmidlifecrisis.com. Until next time.